You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Welcome to In the Garden with the University of California Master Gardeners. I'm Katrina Kirkaby here with Tina Spindler, your host for the show.
Hey, Katrina. It's May. Happy spring.
Happy spring. What a great year for this has been as far as rain and
Yes, the
gardens are happy. The ground's happy. The soil's happy.
And your garden, you showed me some pictures before we started the show. It looks amazing. We'll talk about that more in a little bit. But yeah, May is awesome. And the best thing I like about May is we're going to head into warmer weather. And that means our gardens are going to go full speed ahead. There's no stopping them now. They're going to be growing like crazy.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Including the weeds. But we'll talk about that later. And the bugs. But we'll talk about that later, too.
Well, we have a lot to talk about today. I think we're going to be covering maybe some entertaining, flowers, lawns, veggies, pests. We have a full hour here.
It's spring. There's lots to do in
lots
the garden
to do
this time of year. But I'm glad you mentioned entertaining. As I mentioned to you before we started recording, I did a little bit of entertaining already in April, which was super fun, but my garden had to be touched up a little bit before I did that, even though it was spring, because, you know, I like to plant bulbs, right? And here in Southern California, the spring bulbs bloom early, February and March. So by my April get-togethers, they were pretty much done.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had to pull out a lot of ranunculus. And then I had some blank spots in the garden. And so what do you do? You know, you don't want people to come over and
see this master gardener had her garden's a dirt spot.
Yeah, exactly. And yet.
Oh, you're a master gardener, yeah. Right?
And yet I also have roses and perennials like Shasta daisies and lavender. And so it's not like I need to dig up an entire flower bed. I need to dig up bits and pieces of that flower bed, and I need to replace those things with some warm season flowers so that I get some more color. So let's talk about what I chose or what I could choose, because I didn't choose all of these, but okay, let's talk about what
I always love hearing your list.
Yeah. So this is a great excuse to go to the nursery, right? Our favorite, very favorite pastime.
Do we need an excuse?
Yeah, true.
And it's daylight. Let's go to the
I'm awake. Let's go to the nursery. But yeah, because we are going to the nursery, and they may still have some of those cool season flowers like pansies, we don't want to choose those, and snapdragons. We really don't want to choose those now because we know it's going to get blazing hot here. And those cool things aren't going to like that hot weather.
And I think we should tell people are going to want to purchase some of them because they're pretty, but they're not going to last. And you might as well get your warm season flowers in so they can get going and just start growing and blooming.
Exactly. Now, if you want to spruce up your pots in particular and you want something that's blooming right now, then for sure get, you know, whatever you want to get. But just know that if you choose cool season flowers, you're not going to get but maybe another month or two out of them. Whereas if you choose these warm season flowers, they're going to go until October. So what did I try and find? Cosmos. I love cosmos. They're the first flower I ever planted when I was 8 years old.
Aww.
So sweet. I still love them. Zinnias, any of the salvias, Rudbeckia, which is kind of sunflower-like, but not as big as sunflowers. Black-eyed Susans is a common name for Rudbeckia. Gomphrena, marigolds, petunias, verbenas. Those are all great things for the warm weather. So I chose some of those. And then for shady areas, you can get begonias, impatiens, lobelias. Those will last through your summer weather for the shady areas. Okay, so now you brought all these home. You're really excited, and oh dear, now you have to plant them. And so what do? You get the shovel out? Well, yeah, you get the shovel out if you've got like a whole bed that you want to plant. But Katrina and I, as I said, were looking at some pictures that she showed me of her garden. It's just stunning. She has California poppies and some Santa Barbara daisies and some lupins. And what else did you have?
Oh, sunflowers and roses and everything is just going off right now.
But she knows that in May, those California poppies are going to be done. And so if she's going to be entertaining in May, she's going to have some blank spots in her garden. But she's not going to be able to take her shovel out and dig up that whole bed. She's just going to be able to do little, you know, patches of it here and there. So I wanted to give everybody a little hint about how I do that with a hand tool. My favorite, well, I have like three favorite hand tools, as you know. But anyway, this is one of my favorite hand tools, and it's called a Mattox.
How do you spell that, Tina?
M-A-T-T-O-X. And so think of like a mini pick an axe thing, you know, mm-hmm. that you would use a big giant one if you were trying to dig up a tree root or something. This is a handheld version.
So it's what, about 2 feet long?
It's the handle's about 18 inches long. Yeah. And then the blade on the top of the handle has two sides to it. One side is like a square, sharpish kind of blade that you use to dig a hole in the soil. And then the other side is three prongs. And after you've dug the hole, you can use those three prongs to mix in your soil amendments and fertilizer, because as we've always said, whenever we talk about new plantings, you always want to amend the soil and add fertilizer every time you're planting new stuff.
You know what? Sometimes that part goes over people's head, because they get so excited about, I got plants, I'm just going to stick them in the ground. But it's really, really important if you want your plants to have a good start in a healthy, long summer and a lot less work, is to do what Tina just said, amend your soil, do some fertilizer, and it is a wonderful investment for your garden. So don't forget that part, because a lot of us get excited and just want to stick plants in the ground.
Exactly. But you'll have so much better performance if you do this, because, you know, think about it. If you're serving up a dinner, and you don't give people a nice place to eat, they're going to have indigestion. So give your plants a nice place to grow and serve up their little spot by amending the soil and giving them some fertilizer. So how do you amend the soil? Well, you just buy a bag of compost. It's sometimes labeled compost. It's sometimes labeled garden soil. It really isn't garden soil. It's composted, you know, leaves, grass, you know, ground up organic materials. And then it's bagged and sold to us so that we can put that organic matter back in our soil. Our plants love that. And we also want to put some fertilizer in at the same time. So do, if you don't have one, think about investing in one of those Mattocks. And you'll love it. It's way easier than trying to dig a hole with a trowel, especially where we live, because that clay soil is pretty brutal. When you're trying to dig a trowel in, you'll kill your wrist trying to dig holes with just a trowel. So that's my hint, is use a Mattox, dig your holes for three or four plants in one spot, move down to your next open area, plant a few more plants. And then after you get all of your plants planted, I know Katrina will probably guess what I'm going to say next. My other favorite garden word starts with an M, and it's mulch. Especially if you're going to be entertaining. If you mulch your whole garden, the flower beds that you just planted.
Oh, just beautiful. It just finishes it off. It's like you have an interior decorator outside, just making it just looks, and people don't know why it looks so good. It's one of those things that hard to put your, if you're not a real gardener, it's hard to put your fingertips on. Why does that look so good? Why do those plants pop?
It's mulch. Kind of the difference between, you know, putting a wrinkled old tablecloth on a table and putting a crisply ironed tablecloth on, right? Makes all the difference in the world. It just looks really nice. And I know if we have any beginning gardeners listening, they're going to say, what's mulch? What do you mean? What is that? And mulch just means something that you lay on top of the ground. So in a vegetable garden, it could be straw. You mulch your veggie garden with straw just to keep the weeds down and the water from evaporating. But in a flower garden, if you are mostly having shrubs, then you can mulch with wood chips. You know, you just spread those out and looks fabulous. But if you're mulching in a flower bed, you're probably just going to want to use compost to mulch.
It's smaller. It looks neater and tidier. It doesn't have any competition with the flowers that you're planting.
Exactly. And then when you replant flowers in the next season, you don't have those bark chips that are going to get mixed in with your soil, because you don't want to mix bark chips into your soil. You just want them to lay on top of your soil. So that's the next thing I do is mulch. And then your flower beds are going to be looking pretty amazing. And then if you have lawn...
Back to your flower beds, what sometimes people forget to do is you buy these little six packs and you put them in. You forget to look at how tall the plants get.
Oh, good point.
Okay. So another thing when you're doing that, when you're arranging your plants, and even when you're in the store, if you want, this thing's only 4 inches tall, well, it might become 4 feet tall. So you got to look at how big the plants get for the area you're planting them. And then we also want to put probably the taller ones in the back. So if you put the tall ones in the front, then they'll block the view of your others. So just a couple other things to think about when you're in the garden.
Absolutely. And then the next thing you should do to the rest of your flower bed is deadhead. So if you have roses, you want to make sure you're deadheading all of those roses.
And Tina, what does deadheading mean?
It means chopping off their little heads. No, it means... Say that to one of my 2-year-old grandsons and they'll go, ah! What it does mean, though, is you do cut off the spent blossoms. So the roses that are, you know, finished blooming, you don't want to just leave that there. You want to cut down the stem to the first 5-leaf leaflet. And the reason you want to go down that far, as opposed to a 3-leaf leaflet, is that you will get a sturdier plant and new buds, new flower buds, from that 5-leaf leaflet. And it'll keep your rose healthy. So be sure you deadhead your roses. And also, because they probably bloomed for the first time in April and you want them to keep on blooming, when you deadhead, I always take a bag of fertilizer out with me. And as I deadhead each rose bush, I sprinkle a little bit of fertilizer according to the package directions around each rose bush so that I have continued blooms all season long.
Now, that's something to pay attention, package directions, because I tend to deadhead whenever I can think about it. So you don't want to be fertilizing all the time. So look at the directions and make sure you follow it. And different types of fertilizers have you fertilizing at different times. And so just to pay attention to that, because you'll get better flowers that way. You don't want to under or over.
For sure, especially if you're using synthetic fertilizers as opposed to organic fertilizers. Organic fertilizers are usually a bit gentler, and the way that you can tell that is look at the numbers that are on the fertilizer package. Organic fertilizer numbers for nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, those three nutrients are the main nutrients, and you'll see those three numbers separated by dashes on every bag or box of fertilizer. So the first number is nitrogen, the second number is phosphorus, that promotes bloom, and the last number is potassium, and that promotes overall plant health. And I think I forgot to say the nitrogen promotes green growth. And all plants need nitrogen because they all have some green growth, but flowering plants, as you can imagine, need more phosphorus because that's what promotes flowering. But the organic varieties of fertilizers will have low numbers, like it might say 3, 5, 4 would be the percentages of each of those nutrients. If you had a synthetic fertilizer, it might say 10, 15, you know, 10. And that is especially important then. Those percentages are higher, so they can have a tendency to, quote, burn your plants if you don't follow the package directions. So, for instance, as Katrina was saying, it may be for that particular fertilizer, it's time released, and you only need to fertilize once every 2 months or 3 months, whereas with a different type of fertilizer, you might need to fertilize every 30 days. So be sure you're just paying attention so you don't harm your plants or underfeed them.
Or overfeed them and waste your money.
Yeah, exactly. Because they're not cheap, these fertilizers. So, okay, so we have pulled out our old plants. We have planted our new plants. We have mulched. We have deadheaded any flowers. And we have fertilized our perennial plants like roses. What else do we want to do? Ah, the lawn. If you still have a lawn, and I still do because I have little grandchildren who play out there, and I love to entertain and set tables up out there. So I still have a patch of lawn. And it's always nice 2 weeks before you have your event to give your lawn a little food too, because it'll really green up nicely in a couple of weeks' time. And also you should be feeding your lawn somewhat regularly if you want it to stay, you know, lush and healthy. But generally in the hot months, you'll probably want to cut back on the fertilizer unless you have a lawn that thrives during the very hot months. But the cool season lawns don't want to be fertilized when the weather's hot. And then, of course, when you fertilize, you've got to water everything in. We don't ever want to fertilize on dry earth. We want to water first, give a little food, and then water again so that it can all soak in.
And they'll be happy.
Everybody will be happy. And then also remember, before you entertain, turn your sprinklers off, because the last thing you want people to do... Don't laugh. We had a family friend gathering. We had seven little kids under five, and the sprinklers came on in the morning, and my husband went running out there to turn them off, because the last thing we needed was seven toddlers mucking around in a wet lawn. That would not have been a pretty picture.
You know, I was visualizing it sprinkling on everybody at your party.
Well, that too. So be sure you turn your sprinklers off if you're having a party. And then one other quick thing I'll talk about before we move on to veggies and other good things is, so your pots, right? You want to have these beautiful flowering pots right at your front door or in a key place on your patio. And you're like, oh my gosh, I got to pick out the flowers. I got to, you know, plant them time enough so that they have time to grow and become really floriferous, right? Quick hack. If you're having a party, go to a big box retailer or a nursery that you like that has those big hanging baskets. And they're just loaded mm-hmm. and cascading over with blooms. And yeah, they're a little expensive, but if you don't have pots that are looking all that great and you just want to make a statement when people come to your front door, buy two of those baskets, rip out whatever in your pots, your two pots on either side of your front door, and drop those baskets in. Done. And everyone will think, oh, wow, yeah, Tina is a master gardener. Look at these pots. Yeah, no, I totally cheat.
That was 2 hours ago, and dropping them in the front door, and welcome to my house. Yes. Oh, yes, aren't they lovely?
So
you know, you're not the only one that has done that. It's just absolutely wonderful.
Sometimes
you have to do things quickly and easily, and you got to figure out where to put your time, and sometimes just grabbing a couple of those plants, you could spend time doing other things. Because I don't know about you, but a lot of times I'll get behind, like, I thought I had plenty of time.
Oh my gosh, because then there is food. You are going to feed people, right? So you might have to be in the kitchen a little bit. And so give yourself a break and take some shortcuts where you can. And the other thing that you have to leave time for is, I don't know about your patio, but man, the spiders love my patio furniture and my patio cover. So there always has to be a couple hours to go out and just clean all of that stuff up, too.
Yeah, yeah. I live up in the hills, so you live in the hills, too. So
yeah.
You both get a lot of that.
Right. And a few bird droppings and whatever else. So, yeah, give yourself a break when it comes to getting your yard in shape so that you have time to do the rest of the things for your party so that you can then be just excited.
And start ahead of time if you can.
Yeah, for sure.
But everybody works at a different pace, and some people are like hurry up last minute pace, and some people are just a little bit every day. So figure out what works for you and how far away your party is or get together is, and
yeah,
what you're willing to do.
And be okay without perfection. For this last go round of mine, I had unexpected visitors the week before. Gophers, my favorite uninvited guests. Not. And so some of those lovely flowers I just planted, they decided they were going to eat them. And so I still had some holes that I hadn't planned on having in the garden. But you just have to let go. And
it gives you something to talk about. Like, I used to have a plant there yesterday.
Take your guests around and say, see that hole? See that hole?
That's gophers. Called a gopher.
Yeah. And speaking of gophers, you're probably having a lot of gopher activity. They seem to come in the springtime like gangbusters. And so before we started recording, Katrina was trying to convince me that I, too, can set gopher traps and catch gophers.
It's not that hard.
But I'm a little afraid because I don't want to empty the traps. But they're so bad this year, I think I'm going to have to try it because the gopher guy that comes to my house just is too busy. And by the time he gets here, it's destroyed. So I think I'm going to have to do it myself.
You know, it's amazing, Tina. I always see you as the know everything about gardens. And for you to say that about gophers, it makes you so human.
Real human, right? And a big scaredy cat.
Let me tell everybody, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. And they're not that hard to set. And they sell them online if you have gopher problems. You can do it. I have great faith in you. You can make it as easy as possible. And I got over a city girl that used to move snails, now kills gophers and rats. So
wow, good for you. You've come a long way.
Anything's possible if I could do this.
That's good. I am going to try. So I'm gonna order some of those gopher traps you showed me and give it a try.
I'll come over here and help you set them.
Good. And if I call you screaming when I find a dead gopher,
I'll come over and get your gopher for you.
Thank you.
Right?
Yeah. Okay, enough of that. Why don't we move on to veggie gardens? What are you growing this year?
Oh, my goodness. I have not gone to the grocery store in a long, long time.
Wow. What are you harvesting already?
Well, you know, we push the seasons a bit.
Right.
Okay, so sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I am eating so much broccoli at the end of April, I can't believe it.
Oh, so still have some cool season stuff.
We push it, but, you know, I pushed it for the broccolini and it all bolted, you know. Mm. So I'm going to have a little in May, a little dry spot, but I haven't been to the grocery store for vegetables this year.
Oh, my gosh.
I bought some garlic. You know, but there's just so much out there, you know. It's just like such good stuff. So right now I have planted I'm finishing up with the broccoli, and I have two heads of cabbage that are just about, just about there. But I'm planting beans and tomatoes and cucumbers and eggplants and my snap peas are still going. And kale, of course. Kale's like my go-to thing. When we run out, like, you know, that between season thing where there's just not enough of the warm to cold or cold to warm. Lots of kale.
What's your favorite kale?
Oh God.
Or what ones do you plant?
I plant everything right now.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't remember my favorite kale and I can't find it. So it's like, but right now I have about like six different kales going.
Wow.
And then I mix them up a lot. And, you know, there's a lot you could do with kale. You could saute, you could put it in soups, you could put it in stews, you could put it in salads. You know, people just think, well, salad. I'm like, no, just throw it in omelets. I mean, and you could saute it with a little bit of lemon and some garlic. I mean, it's healthy and it's foolproof to grow. I mean, it's really easy to grow.
I totally agree with you. It's a staple. I have it in my garden year round. I think the plants I have right now are 18 months old. Yeah. They're as tall as my grandboys, so they're like 3 feet tall.
Yeah, some taller. Yeah.
Yeah. And you just keep harvesting those outer leaves and let it keep growing. And my favorite is blue curl kale.
Yeah, I like that.
That one's my favorite. It just seems to have the longest life for me. So that's the one I grow religiously year in and year out. And we do a lot of kale salads, a lot of kale salads.
Yeah, there's so much to do with kale. You know, yeah. I used to think of those salads, but I love kale salads. But, you know, now throwing it in a soup or an omelet or just, we take it camping with us.
Oh.
Because it lasts a long time.
Yeah.
And we backpack and we'll take and clean it up and cut it up and then put it in paper towels in a plastic container.
What a good idea.
And it lasts longer.
And it's lightweight.
It's really lightweight.
Yeah.
And then we saute it up in the mountains, right? So, like, having...
Ooh.
We just have really good, a little bit of garlic and olive oil. And
better than freeze-dried camping food.
Oh, tell me about it. So the first week we're good.
Yeah.
Good stuff. But anyways, it's just, there's so much to put in your vegetable garden right now. And I'm sure I have more. What else is going on? Cucumbers, a couple different kinds of those. Zucchinis. You know, lots of tomatoes. Oh, onions. I'm so excited about my onions. Oh my gosh. I planted onions in January. And probably in June I'll be able to harvest.
Yeah, let's tell folks about onions. We've talked about it before, but just we haven't probably for a while. So onions,
we should probably talk about it in December.
We should. But just so folks know, you know, why they won't be planting onions right now. You can plant green onions now, but you're not planting bulbing onions right now because onions are planted when the right time of year is based on the latitude of where you live. So bizarre. So our latitude requires that we plant something called short day onions. And short day onions mean that they want to be planted when the daylight is short. Hence, we plant them in January. And then they will bulb. If you are at a different latitude, a more northerly latitude, then you want to plant long day onions. And so you plant your onions in the summer when the days are longer. So if people have seen short day versus long day onions, that's the reason. You have to plant the onions that are appropriate for your latitude. But the cool thing about planting onions in January is that, like Katrina said, eventually they will bulb. You'll be able to harvest them in May, some, and then in June, for sure, they'll be ready. But between when you plant them, I use them as green onions.
Yes.
So I plant a lot, and then I just go use them as, because a green onion just means that it is a young onion.
Yeah, it is wonderful. And the young onions are so tender.
Yeah.
It is just really, really tender. And we've had some, we're taking them also when they bolt.
Yes.
You know, so they're not going to develop, and we're taking the green onions, and then I start something else. I start dehydrating.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I've dehydrated some of the green tops. So that's my first time this year. I'm making a little onion, so you could add a little onion to your food.
Yeah.
So that's
cool.
I'll bring you some.
Yeah, I'd like to try that. So in my garden, my veggie garden, I'm a little behind because we had a bumper crop of grandbabies last fall, and so I'm spending more time growing grandbabies this year than in the garden, which is wonderful.
Wonderful.
So when you have busy times, don't fret. Do what you can do. So in March, I did get my tomatoes in. I prioritize my tomatoes because I love fresh tomatoes. That's my favorite summer veggie. And then as I get a few moments here and there, I try and plant some more stuff. And so I will keep this month planting. And folks who haven't gotten their veggie garden in, their warm season veggies, should try to do it this month. Because if you wait any longer past May, you're going to be running out of time to get, you know, those...
A good harvest.
A good harvest, yeah.
You know, Tina, we're going to have to take a quick little segue, and we'll be right back with our vegetable gardens. But we need to let everybody know that you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. For more information, go to KUCI.org. Okay, now back to vegetable gardens.
Thanks for keeping us up to date on that. Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about tips for planting warm season veggies this time of year.
So as I said, tomatoes are my favorite. Because who doesn't want bruschetta and fresh salsa, right? Or just to pop those cherry tomatoes in your mouth for a snack. Yum, yum. But when you plant a tomato, there are a couple of tips. And the first tip is to dig a hole deeper than the size of the root ball of that plant. And to take off the leaves along the stem, the lower leaves, because up to about 3 or 4 inches, because you actually on a tomato plant want to bury the plant deep and cover up that 3 or 4 inches of stem with soil. And the reason is wherever you picked off those leaves at the stem, if that stem is under the ground, those leaf nodes, once they're under the ground, will send out roots. And so that way you get a tomato plant that has a really vigorous root system because it's now producing roots instead of just in that 4-inch soil root ball. It's now going to be producing roots along a 6 or 8-inch soil root ball.
Yeah, you know, I've talked to so many people that say, what? You want me to bury half my tomato plant? Yes. Yes, and it sounds strange, but you know, you could just sacrifice those 2 little bottom ones or 3 little bottom ones and stick them a little bit farther in. It is so worth it.
You'll have much more vigorous plants that way.
Yeah.
And then the other thing to always do when you plant your tomato, because time goes by so fast that if you don't do it when you plant it, you're going to end up having a tomato plant that's laying on the ground because they grow pretty fast. They need to be tied up. So for sure, plant a 6 or 8 foot stake, not plant it, but pound it in the ground next to your tomato plant if you're going to stake it using a wooden stake, which is one way to stake it. You can also use tomato cages, but the tomato cages are going to be pretty inadequate if you get what's called an indeterminate tomato. An indeterminate tomato means that it's going to keep growing and keep producing fruit all the way up until we get cold weather. And so it's just going to get taller and taller and taller and taller if it doesn't get a disease. And then it's going to outgrow your tomato cage, and then the whole thing's going to fall over.
Now, Tina, are you talking about the tomato cages that are like 3 feet tall? Or are you talking about the really tall, like Texas tomato cages?
I'm talking about the tomato cages you get at the nursery, yeah. Right? We know that they're 3 or 4 feet tall, right?
Yeah.
They're not big enough. But Katrina just mentioned the Texas tomato cage, so tell us about that.
Oh, well, Texas tomato cages are, I would never put a tomato, unless it's a determinate or bush tomato, and that means, should I go into
tomato? Mm-hmm, yeah.
So determinate, there's two types of tomatoes. There's determinate and indeterminate. And determinate tend to be smaller, and they, how I remember what the difference is that you get a lot of tomatoes at one point in time. So I think it's a determinate amount of time everything is producing. And I like that for if I was wanted to make a lot of sauce or spaghetti or freezing it. But most of the time, I want to have a tomato this week, next week, and the following week, so I get indeterminate. And indeterminate goes on for an indeterminate amount of time. That's how I think about it. And they can get really, really tall. So there's some people that get those little ones they sell in the store are not good for tall tomatoes. It's kind of a, you get, then you're stuck because now you got this little cage around this huge tomato. It does not really work. There's something called Texas tomato cages. And what they are is they are like a round metal cylinder, metal
hoops.
Cage.
They're hoops.
They're hoops. And they could either be like 4 feet tall or you could put another one on top of it to make it 8 feet tall. And that's one way you could use your tomatoes. I find unless you're using a stake for those tall tomatoes, doesn't really work that well. I either do the Texas tomatoes or like what you do. And why don't you tell them what you do, Tina?
Yeah, so this was taught to me by another master gardener, and I love it. And I've been doing it for, I don't know, forever. Anyway, what you do is you buy concrete reinforcing wire. And if you don't know what that is it's a grid of wire that is placed on the ground where you're going to pour a patio slab. And it helps the cement stay in place. It's sold in sheets at one of the big box retailers. and sheets. And when I say sheets, they're probably, what are they, like 6 feet by 6 feet?
Something like that.
Yeah. And they're just flat. What you can do is you can form them into a cylinder and then, you know, tie them with zip ties to keep that cylinder together. And you can drive a tall stake into the ground and zip tie that cylinder to a stake. And that way you have a big cage for a single plant. But what I like to do, because I garden in raised beds for my veggie garden, so if I did that, I'd probably only have room for 3 tomato plants in my garden, right? So what I do instead is I leave that sheet flat and I zip tie it to 2 tree poles, and then I espalier the tomato plant. And that just means, espalier is a French word for making things grow horizontal rather than in a rounded shape. And so what I do is I take those tomato plants, and as they grow their little branches, I zip, or not zip tie them, I just use the plastic, you know, ties, tape. Yeah. I just tie them to that grid. It's basically a trellis is what it is. So I trellis my tomato plants, and that way I keep the tomato plants only about, I only need about a foot of space because they're growing along a trellis, as opposed to 3 feet wide, I only need about a foot wide. And then I can plant something else in front of it, you know, peppers or, you know, some other carrots or onions or whatever else. So if you have limited amount of space, I really like using these concrete reinforcing wire trellises. They're super inexpensive to make. I've had mine for probably 15 years.
Yeah. It's a little bit more work to get it set up, but like Tina said, she's had hers for 15 years.
And the way I avoid the work, because I am lazy, is I leave them up. So I leave the trellis up along the north side of each of my raised beds. And I, in the times when I'm not growing tomatoes, maybe I'm growing snap peas and the snap peas use the trellis. Or maybe I'm not growing anything tall that year, but at least I don't have to take it down because I'm too lazy to put it back up again. So that's another thought too, is to just leave it in place until the next time you want to plant something that's growing tall in that area. So it's great, inexpensive, and it's not going to topple over. The worst thing that happens, and I need to replace this at the end of this season, is the wooden tree poles that you use to tie the concrete reinforcing wire to. Mine have now been in the ground because you have to sink it like 2 feet in the ground. So it's sturdy. Mine have now are rotting away. So I'm going to have to replace those tree poles because the 2 feet that's in the ground is getting very shaky. But other than that, I mean, 15 years, that's
great.
That's a pretty small investment of time. So what else am I planting? So I always plant, you said you had cucumbers. I'll ask you what kind you have, but the kind I always plant are pickling cucumbers.
Well, because of you, I plant pickling cucumbers now.
Do you?
I put both, the bigger ones in pickling, but okay, this is something, you just learn stuff from Tina, right? Those pickling cucumbers, it's my husband and myself. We get these great big, you know, those good-sized cucumbers, 6-8 inches. That's a lot of cucumber to eat for two people, right? Those pickling cucumbers, you pick one of them, hey, it's perfect in a salad for two people. So, yes, I'm a convert.
Yes, there's lots of great cucumbers out there and some ethnic ones, you know, Armenian, Japanese, and they all have, you know, wonderful textures and flavors that
I
are
also
a little
plant
different.
Japanese, because I like the taste of the Japanese.
Yeah. So don't shy away from them. I just have limited space, so I generally only plant the pickling cucumbers for that exact reason, is then I'm not throwing half a cucumber away constantly. I'm just picking one cucumber, chopping it up for my salad, and then I don't have to throw any away. And then I do make homemade pickles. I love homemade pickles.
Ooh.
Yeah. Super easy and super yummy.
Okay, so what else are you growing?
So my snap peas are still going, and 'cause I did a late sowing of those, And it's always a good idea when you're doing snap peas and beans. I think you do this too, Katrina, is that you don't plant like a 10 or 15 foot row unless you have a huge family, because you're going to get way too many snap peas and beans. And snap peas, in case you don't know, need cooler weather. So I started planting them last fall, and then about once a month, and I would only plant a 5 foot row. And then a month later, I would plant another 5 foot row. And so I planted my last 5 foot row probably the end of March, because I know the weather's going to get too hot.
Yes.
But I still had 60 days before the weather would get hot. Mm-hmm. So that'll be my last crop of snap peas. But then what I did is I started planting my first 5 feet of green beans. Because when the snap peas are done, I want to have those green beans ready.
I don't know about you, but it's hard to get my snap peas. You grow more than I do. But I have this thing where the snap peas belongs to the gardener. Because they're so...
I think that's fair.
Whoever's in the garden, people come visit, like, I pass out the snap peas. It's so hard to make it in the house with them, because you're down there for a while. I'm down there in my garden. It's quite big. And I just, like, eat some snap peas. I'm like, oh, yeah, I have to share. You know? Just
like, no, you don't have to share.
Sometimes I don't. But you don't have to plant 5 feet at a time, whatever your garden allows. But, one thing I like what you said is about succession.
Exactly.
I grow smaller amounts, and I still do the same thing, because they don't, they don't last. And then you have to, take care of the gardener.
Right. Exactly. And, you especially don't want to plant too much of something like zucchini, because then you're going to have to take a basket of them and walk up and down the street and give them to your neighbors.
And they won't have to answer the door after a while,
they're not going to answer the door. But it does embarrass your teenage kids. I remember when my kids were teenagers and I was doing that. They went, oh my gosh, Mom, don't be going to the neighbors with zucchini. That's just so weird.
I tell you, my neighbors love it, because we tend to grow a little too much, and like, you don't know what's going to, sometimes plants just don't work. And we have, where I live, I have enough room. I don't have any problem with space in the garden. So neighbors love us. Like, hey, you want some of this or you want some of that? And bring over a broccoli head or some cauliflower or some tomatoes.
Especially tomatoes.
Oh.
I don't think anybody that I've ever approached with homegrown tomatoes has ever turned those down. They're usually asking me, is it tomato season yet? Is it tomato season yet? Because it's hard to get that super tomato taste unless you grow them and they're vine ripened. So everybody enjoys a vine ripened tomato, I think.
Yeah. What else are you putting in your garden?
Well, I grow carrots year round because of this crop of grandkids that I have. So every time they come and visit grandma, everybody wants to pull a carrot out. That's just, we had at this little party I was talking about, we had some friends who had their 2.5-year-old visit our garden for the first time, and my husband took her back, and the last batch of tomatoes is ready to be picked. So they're big, they're like carrots. Yeah. This last batch of carrots that I planted is ready to be harvested. And so she pulls out this carrot that's almost as big as her. It's 10 inches long and an inch and a half in diameter. And she is so proud of herself. And she washes it off, and her daddy says she can eat it. And that child, for the next hour, carried that carrot around, munching on it like it was an all-day sucker. We kept asking her if she wanted to give it to us, and she shook her head. There would have been quite a meltdown, I think, if we had actually tried to take that carrot away.
There's something about the taste of homegrown vegetables. Kids eat them. I had, when the kids were little, I had some, a father called me and said, what's this organic thing? And he says, my daughter won't eat vegetables. And I'm like, oh man, she eats a lot of vegetables over here. And that's another thing, Tina, segueing a bit, is getting kids in your garden. If you have little ones, they love to garden. And then they grow up gardening, and it's just, and they understand, and it's healthy, and we've had kids circle our fruit bowls and, you know, go down and help us. And, you know, and then I'm saying, what do you mean your kid? I'm like, kid eats everything, right?
At my house, they eat vegetables.
Yeah, they eat lots of vegetables.
But they get to pick them.
They get
and
to
I
pick
think that
them.
Makes all the difference
it's
in the
huge.
World. Yeah. So it is. It's true. Even if you can only plant a few pots, it's huge if you can do that with
if
your
you
children.
Can plant, if you don't, can't plant anything else, you taught me this, plant a pot with some carrots in it. And then your kids could come, have them plant the carrots, and then they could come and harvest them. And that's if you, you know, if you don't have any room at all, you could plant just a little bit for the kids. And it just turns them into, it's fun and it's healthy.
And carrots don't take much space. They, you know, a carrot is usually only an inch wide. So in a, you know, 14 inch pot, you can get a fair couple dozen carrots in there. The only trouble with carrots for kids is that it takes a good 3 months for a carrot to get to edible size. And so, of course, they don't have the patience to wait, which is why I am planting carrots year round, so that I always have carrots that are ready to pick, because they just don't have patience to wait. A fast crop to plant for kids, and I do plant these year round too, are radishes. Now, kids don't often like the taste of radishes because they're kind of spicy, mm-hmm. but they do still like to harvest them. So that's a 3 week from seed to harvest. So that's a really quick veggie. So that's a fun one to plant with them, and they can at least harvest them. And then you, as the grown up, can eat them if they're too spicy for the kids. But that's a, you know, a pretty quick turnaround. And the other one that's fairly quick are the snap peas, which it's too late to plant snap peas unless you live by the beach, probably. It's going to be too hot soon. But when you next plant your cool season stuff, the kids love snap peas because, as Katrina says, she just loves to be in her garden and pick them and eat them for a snack to keep her energy up. And the kids love to do the same thing, to pick those snap peas and munch on them. That's one of the things that we advise school gardens to plant is snap peas, because it's usually a thing that kids just get so excited because they can see that pea hanging there and they can pick it off and eat it right away. Very rewarding.
So much fun. There's so much to do. And would you plant, Tina? Would you plant mostly from starters in May?
Absolutely. In May, I would only plant tomatoes, peppers from starters, because it would take too long for them to get to harvest size if you try and do it from seed. Some things that you could still plant from seed, though, would be green beans. Green beans you can still plant from seed. Pumpkins you could still plant from seed. But the tomatoes and peppers and eggplant I would for sure plant from starts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing to do in your veggie...
I want to say one... Yeah. Here's another time when you have to see how big things grow.
Oh,
I was at the nursery the other day, and this woman, she bought like 10 tomato plants, indeterminate plants. I said, "You got a good sized garden." She goes, "Oh yeah." She says, "It's about almost 8 feet."
Oh my goodness.
So she was going to put a tomato plant about every 10 inches.
Oh my gosh.
Some of these were really big tomatoes.
Oh my gosh.
Beefsteak tomatoes. So we had a little conversation. So when you go to plant your vegetables, read how big they get.
Yes, for sure. And the tall things like beans and tomatoes that you're going to grow on a trellis, you need to plant those at what would be the back of your garden so that they don't shade any of the shorter plants that are in front of them. Or think, if you're good with directions, think north side of your garden is where you want your tall plants. But yeah, for sure, you need to look at spacing. But one thing we should mention about spacing is there, if you have a small area, there is a technique called square foot gardening, which you can Google. And that basically takes, say, a raised bed and divides it into 1 square foot sections. And then it tells you how many plants you can put in that 1 square foot section.
It's amazing.
It is.
Absolutely amazing. Square foot gardening, Google it. And it is amazing what we've seen come out of those gardens.
It will be very densely planted, and you still need room for your tomatoes. You cannot densely plant tomatoes. You still need about 3 feet for each tomato plant. You know, if you're planting, say lettuce, you know, you can get four lettuce plants in 1 square foot.
And you might not want to be planting lettuce right now.
No, not lettuce right now. But if you're planting some green onions or some carrots, gosh, I think how many carrots can you get in a square? I think it's like 64, isn't it? 8 by 8 or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah. So you can get 64 carrots, for example, ish, in 1 square foot. So it really gives you some hints about which plants you can plant densely and which ones you probably should leave, you know, one pepper plant in 1 square foot. You don't want to go crazy by planting too many.
Too many. You know what, Tina? This time is flying by.
Yeah.
We need to change the subject because we don't have much time left.
Okay.
We need to talk about pests.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
That's something that we really need to hit on.
This is probably the pestiest time of year, don't you think?
Yes.
It really is. So as the weather warms up and your plants are growing like crazy, the pests are also multiplying like crazy. So the best plant control for your garden is pest control for your garden is
you.
And you have to be out in your garden frequently so that you can stop any infestations when they first happen, so they don't get out of control. So the first thing to do is to use your eyes and try and prevent things. And the way that you prevent pests and disease is keep a clean garden. So make sure that you're keeping it weeded and any debris, fallen leaves, etc., is picked up and thrown away. The other thing is to pull out diseased plants because, believe it or not, diseased plants attract pests. Kind of crazy. So pull out any sick plants so that they don't attract pests. And then try and catch things early. So if you see snails, which, oh my gosh, this year has been crazy for snails.
Too, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was a wet year, so the snails are very happy. So get that snail bait out. If you want to stay organic, choose a snail bait whose main ingredient is iron, an iron-based snail bait. And if you have pets or children, be very careful not to apply it in areas where they're playing, because you don't want them to accidentally ingest any of it. You can also use things like beer traps. My kids loved this when they were little, is you can fill a small cup with about an inch of beer. The yeast in the beer attracts the snails. They'll crawl up over the edge of the cup and they'll drown in the beer. What a way to go. Talk about drowning your sorrows, right? The other pest that you'll see a lot of this time of year is aphids, probably all over your rosebuds. You'll see lots of aphids. The first thing to try is a strong jet of water. So no pesticide at all. You just want to knock them off. So get that nozzle where you can turn it and it makes a really strong jet of water and just hose those aphids off if you can.
And if you can't, if that doesn't work?
If that doesn't work, use insecticidal soap. Follow the directions. If you're not, don't have the time to mix it up yourself, then it comes in bottles that are ready to spray, you know, just like spraying, you know, hairspray. Mm-hmm. So you can always get it pre-mixed. If you have a big yard like Katrina and I do, and we have plastic sprayers, pump sprayers.
I have three of them.
Yeah. I have two different sizes. And then you have to follow the directions and have the right proportion of the pesticide to water. And then you just go around and spray. Then there's other sprays for specific things. Like if you start getting tomato hornworms, those nasty giant green worms that can defoliate an entire tomato plant.
I'm so lucky not having those.
Yeah, I usually don't get them till the weather gets warmer and then they start to come. But there's a product, an organic product called BT. It's short for Bacillus thuringiensis. And it's actually, is it a bacteria? Now I'm forgetting the exact term.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's an organism, and let's just say organism, that actually infiltrates their bodies and kind of eats them from the inside out. So BT, but you have to be very specific and only spray it on your tomato plants or other plants where you have a caterpillar infestation, but don't spray it on your whole garden because you'll kill all the other caterpillars and then you'll have no butterflies. So be very careful with BT. What else do we use? Spinosads, another insecticide that's organic, but it also can kill bees. So if you want to see the types of pests that spinosad can control, we have an amazing University of California website. So you can just Google UCIPM. That stands for Integrated Pest Management. And on the landing page, you can click for agriculture or home garden. And it will, if you click home garden, then it will give you a list of plants. So from lawns to roses to vegetables, click on the one that you want or use the search feature to identify what you want. And then it will give you a plethora of information about that pest and how to control it, how to prevent it. And you'll have everything you need to know.
You know, it's so great because I don't know about you, but I can't remember it all. And just being able to go back and like, oh, I got this issue going. What do I use for that? And it's real simple.
It is. And if you're not sure what you have, like I had what looked like mold on my bay tree, right? It's like, wow, why do I have mold on some of my bay leaves? And so I just went to that website and typed in, you know, mold looking disease. And sure enough, I had sooty mold on my bay trees and it told me what to do for it.
So, how do you get it off?
It's a multi-step process.
Okay.
And
we'll go look it up.
And so one of the first things I did was get a hedge trimmer and I, you know, trimmed off a lot of the leaves that had, the infestation and then used the appropriate treatment in order to keep it from coming back. So yeah, amazing website. Amazing website. It's like having an entire gardening library at your fingertips.
You know, we probably should have started off with that so people would know to go do that because it's going to happen, you know, it happens fast. So at least in my garden, I have a problem. Sometimes they creep along and then all of a sudden it's boom, and you have to take care of it. And knowing about that website is really nice because it's something like, oh, I won't do that. You can't take care of it in 2 weeks. You got to take care of it now because in 2 weeks you're just in trouble.
Right. And the other thing is, too, is not all bugs are bad. Some bugs are good.
Yeah.
And so if you see something and you're not familiar with it, you can go to this website also and say it's something you see on your rose. And then when you go to the rose section, there will be pictures of pests. And odds are you're going to find a picture of what you saw. And then it might tell you, hey, don't worry about that. That's not, you know, a bad thing. So I think that's all we have time for today. Yes?
I know. Yeah. It always goes so fast, doesn't it?
It does. Because we just get to talk about our most favorite thing.
Well, we want to thank everybody for listening. And we're looking forward to talking to you guys next month at June in the Garden.
That's right.
All righty.
Happy gardening.
Happy gardening.